Blog Talk Radio.
Greetings and welcome to Mount Olympus. I am Hercules Invictus, and today on Age of Heroes, I'm proud to bring you The Enchanted Self with Dr. Barbara Becker-Holstein. Greetings and welcome, Barbara. How are you?
I'm fine. I'm looking forward to this as usual, Hercules. And
me too.
Hopefully we'll have a great discussion.
I know that we will, and I love the topic, bringing your enchanted self with you wherever you go.
Yes, that is the topic. And shall I just jump in, or are you doing some more inviting and mentioning about your program?
No, that's it. We'll get right into your topic.
Okay.
Start by your explaining what the enchanted self is for first-time listeners.
Yes. Well, the enchanted self is the part of yourself that has stored within it valuable energies, many of the energies that go way back to childhood that make you unique and able to handle interesting projects, interesting friendships, all sorts of parts of your life. This enchanted self includes your talents, your strengths, your interests, and particularly as you grow up, your potential. Whether your potential has been exposed to yourself yet or not, you do have potential, whether it's involved with your capacities to invent something or to be a good parent or to know how to cut down a tree. No matter what it is unique to you, even to the point that we all have different fingerprints. Now, you know that, and sometimes it's annoying. Like when I taught school, I had to get my fingerprints checked and make, I don't know, I guess I had to make sure it was me, you know. But we also have fingerprints of the mind, shadow prints, sometimes I call them. And shadow prints are very, very early impressions you've made of the world or things you've seen. And you may not really remember why you hate red jello, but you may have a shadow print that your mother or grandmother brought you jello that was red when you were lying in bed. The next thing you knew, you were in the bathroom throwing up, you know, and it's not the best memory. So what happens with a lot of memories is we suppress them, we forget them, and yet we are moved in positive or negative ways when we're exposed to stuff. So we're very, very complex. And that's why somebody may like a house with a pink kitchen and someone else wouldn't take that house even if they won the lottery and they were given it for free. We are so different, and yet there is a consistency of the human spirit and the drive for success, the drive for competency, the drive to stay alive, the drive very often to bring children into the world, all sorts of mutual drives that overlap. So people sometimes don't appreciate their enchanted self. Very often they get jealous and disappointed. They want to be someone else. You know, that old saying, the grass is greener on the other side. And, of course, if you get to live on the other side, then you find out it really wasn't greener. It was just the way the sun hit the grass or something like that. So, you know, we have these assumptions that somehow we're not good enough or we haven't accomplished enough. And of course, sometimes we have not fulfilled our destinies as much as we can. But the basic truth is that everybody else has taken. And by that I mean everyone has a different, slightly different perspective on the world, slightly different interests than each other, even identical twins, although that many times when they're tested, they're exactly alike, even if they don't know each other. But
right.
Also they have many differences. You know, they're different also. So what I try to encourage people is to fall in love with yourself. And I don't mean that in some strange way. I just mean developing an appreciation for who you are, some of the things you've accomplished. Maybe you're the first person that went to college in your family. Maybe you've made a beautiful dollhouse for a child. Maybe you work at a kitchen, a charity kitchen, and you have many people who look forward to seeing you. Maybe you just plant a little garden and you have fresh tomatoes in the summer. You know, it can be, some people have very small accomplishments. Some people have very large accomplishments. But it all goes back to who you are and how you wish to develop yourself. So we are going tonight to hear, I'm going to read to you or talk to you about some of the stories that I put into one particular book called Recipes for Enchantment, The Secret Ingredient is You.
Both the book and the title
yeah.
were awesome.
Yes, because really the secret ingredient always goes back to ourselves. And it may be something very simple that we've accomplished, or it may be something very big. And yet we did it. It does go back to us. And without us, everything is flat. Not everything in the world, because there are millions of us, but everything is flat in terms of what energy you could have brought to the world. So it's very important to honor ourselves and come into our own sort of stage, get on stage for ourselves and clap for ourselves, at least internally. It's hard. It's very complicated. But
yes,
that's
it is.
Why we're talking about it. Yes. And for me, I'm going to tie this in the way I present this little book first with an experience that I've just been going through for about 2.5 months. And that is the transition of moving. And I think just about everybody has moved at least once, either from a childhood, even if it's just from a childhood home to the home you now live in. In fact, most people have moved 3, 4, 8 times, you know, if you really look at it in our country. That varies person to person, but I can make an assumption that most of us have moved if we're an adult. Well, my husband and I just moved 2.5 months ago. And it's the first time in many years that I had a chance to look at this particular transition. It is a very complicated transition. And I now have unbelievably more respect for moving than I had 3 months ago. It's just
wow.
Amazing. You know, I think some of the things that I've noticed, you probably would agree you've noticed too, and Hercules, you've probably noticed. It's hard to find things. Things that seem so well organized and in their place do not feel that way in a different place.
No, they don't.
They don't even have the same energy that they're giving off. Now, if you think about it, even at the atom level, a dishcloth is the same dishcloth it was in your last house. It hasn't developed new atoms. You know, maybe it lost a few driving in the car to get to your new place, but it's essentially the same. And yet it will feel like almost confusing to try to find those dishcloths. And my thought is that's because a lot of what we take for granted in our day-to-day environment is really the way we perceive these things. We give them some degree of energy and give them a place to be. And once that's all disturbed, unlike us, they do not have living energy. I mean, they may have something. I'm not saying we don't put things we don't understand at the very molecular level into a house or an apartment when we've lived in it a long time. There may be traces of us, but they're minute. Most of what is in that house or apartment is the life force we're bringing. It's us, and it's the particular person you are. If you've lived with roommates, you've probably seen that one roommate will, you know, sort of want her bureau to look a certain way or the little living room or whatever, while another roommate wants it completely differently. I'm going to interrupt myself because, Hercules, I'm sure you've moved more than once. Do you have any thoughts or reactions or memories?
I've moved more times than I can count since I was child. And we lived in Pennsylvania for 10 years. Then we came back to New Jersey. We lived in one place for 2 years approximately. And now we've been in the same place for maybe since 2014. That's 8 years. This is the most stable that it's been for my entire life. Before then, every year or two I'd move. So I've moved countless times, and I know exactly what you mean. And the quest became to find, instead of a house or a place to live, a home. And I finally found the home, not in a particular location, but the people that I'm traveling through life with. So they became my home, and as long as they were there and everything was well and connected between us, where I happened to live or where they happened to live were incidental. So that was something I learned by moving around a lot. And yes, our stories and the stories that we tell, especially, a lot of people have a difficult time finding their inner self or the unique creative expression or their enchanted self. But that part of us is always talking, and it's willing to share its story. And if it doesn't share its story directly by relating what's going on in your life, then it's there in the things that you watch on television, the books that you read, the music you listen to. We surround ourselves with our stories, and they're never far away from us.
You know, that's such a good point. You put that more brilliantly than I've been able to put it together. In this particular apartment where we're living, my husband and I have plenty of room, but a little less, or I should say we overlap a little more than we did in the house, which is natural. Most apartments are not as big, you know. And the stories that we each carry are actually quite different and do not go well together. For example, watching TV and choosing programs, he can handle in his storyline a much more severe approach to certain things, including listening to news late at night and then immediately going into a deep sleep, you know, being able to stop that chapter and start the next chapter, which is I go to sleep now. Well, in my storyline, I need a lot of lightness and a lot of sense of happy endings, even though not all endings are happy, but I need these things. I need to not be told certain bad information if I'm going to need to sleep also. You know, I can handle it. I don't crack up or anything, but I'll lose many hours of sleep, which is not the best thing, you know. So we're not only telling slightly different stories about life, but we're giving different amounts of emotional and physical energy to those stories. You know, like my husband's very political, not in a negative way of influencing people inappropriately, but he majored in, I forget the exact title, but government of some sort in college. And even though say that again?
Public administration?
No, but something to do with government and how it works and, you know, all that stuff. And then he became a psychologist out of interest in the human mind, but not till after, you know, a couple of years of all this government study. So to him, what's going on in the news and the government in various countries is always very politically interesting to him. Well, for me, and it's become like a storyline. It really is a nightly story. He wants the next chapter. And for me, I was fascinated with poetry, with acting, drama, with books, with philosophy, and understanding how people have lived maybe in recent times. How did someone like Emerson live, and Walden Pond, and these sort of people who wanted to develop societies that were perfect rather than imperfect? You know, could this be done? And I'm still looking for a little of that. I think even with The Enchant itself, I'm looking for a way that we can grab our enchanted selves and really flourish. And, you know, even better than I'm even expressing it now. So my storyline connects around a lot of that stuff. So when you have the bottom line is that we have to agree to disagree on some of the storylines that feed our household, you know, and give each a fair shake, you know. And I know with you, I don't know much. I mean, we haven't really socialized, but I did get to meet your beautiful wife once or twice. And I know you have a lot of interests in common, as basically Russ and I do. But I bet there's still some places where your storylines are different.
Oh, yes, very many places. And it's like people have interest in different genres. Some people like romantic comedies. Some people like police procedurals. Other people like horror. Other people like science fiction. And the stories that are told in each of these genres are humanity stories, but they're told in a different way. And just like we have different preferences with the genres that we enjoy, or how the story is told and what type of props are in it and what type of themes are in it, they're still part of the human story. And that unfolds in all the genres. So it is in our personal lives too. We tell ourselves a story or a bunch of stories, and we edit everything to support these stories. So it's difficult for some people if they're hearing something that is edited differently or belongs to a different genre to accept it as veracity. They try to change the other person's story, but that other person is going to protect their story and see it as true, as hard as you would protect yours.
That's right. Yeah.
And if if you just accept that people see the world in different ways and they tell each other different things about what they see and what they experience, if somebody's open to seeing something in a different way, sometimes the stories we tell, if we tell a different story with the same events, it radically changes our world.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Yeah.
And I noticed that people...
I like that.
People also, if they're stuck in a story, and some people get stuck in a story, usually it's when the same thing happens to them over and over and over, and they start saying things like all men or all women or all Greeks or all Americans or all tall people. And once they've created that all category, they're casting for their own movie. So the story that they're stuck in, they're casting everybody in it to fit those roles, and have the movie play out until they work it through. But that is amazing. And I've seen that happen both in my personal life and also as my work as a therapist over the years, that these stories are very tenacious and people are very reluctant to let them go. And usually it takes something very
extreme.
Jar somebody out of the story that they're stuck in.
Yeah, this is a major reason that many people feel they can't find any opportunities or things that really work for them because they are so used to a certain pattern that's, you know, it's not fruitful, but that's why, thank goodness, in our level of living in this country, at least, we have therapists and we can help people break through some of that.
Yeah.
It's not really the work that I do for the enchant itself because, well, the result can be that you break through. My work is more to, with the enchant itself, to help people realize that they have so many talents and interests and potential that they forgot about or never realized they had, and to sort of help them build a new map of their activities and ways of looking at the world that they're really ready to handle. And sometimes breaking out of a loop is something they're not ready to handle. So,
right.
You know, it's all at all different levels. But moving, going back to this whole concept of moving, I really didn't realize how much of my enchanted self was, how can I put this? It wasn't in my house, although the house was lovely. And if we were younger and had plenty of money and whatever, maybe we never would have left it. But my enchanted self capacities were not only moving with me, but some of the things that I missed in the house were entirely tied into my perception or my family's perception, and the new owners will never see it unless they happen to hear this show. You know, for example, I'll give you a very simple example. In this house, we had a very small front hall closet, but it's good we had any front hall closet, you know, for like winter coats and stuff. Well, every time my father would visit, after we bought the house and, you know, they were just getting used to visiting us there, he would open the front hall closet door and he'd say, it's kind of small, but, you know, it would make a really good tiny bathroom. And that could be very helpful, you know, if guests need a bathroom. And nobody in the family agreed with him. You know, we all complained, Daddy, it's too small, it's ridiculous. The pipes don't come to this part of the house, you know, it cost a fortune. But he was pretty set on it. And I would say for 10 years or so when he came to visit, at some point he'd remark about that closet that it could still be turned into a bathroom. Now, I can guarantee, I'll bet on it, I'll bet my hat, you know, that if the new family were interviewed and asked to open the front hall closet, they might say, it's small, but I'm glad we have it. Or they might say, okay, just enough space for us. Or they might say, needs painting. Who knows? But no one would say that it would make a good bathroom. That, you know, that exists as a enchanted self, maybe shared energy. That and it came with me. You know, I still have it. My parents are gone. They probably, well, anyway, I don't even know if my husband still has it. But things are what we take with us when we move and we change environments is very productive if we can realize that we hold most of it. We didn't really leave it behind. We left behind the structure. But, you know, if you have a normal place with a kitchen and a bathroom and windows, I mean, you still have structure, you know. So it's very interesting. And as I began to see some of that, I wasn't quite as sad. I was very sad to leave the house initially. And I would I'll always remember that house. I mean, I remember the apartment I lived in till I was 5 and a half. Sometimes if I'm, like I told my sister this, and she said, I do the same thing. And the thing we both do is if we can't fall asleep, we go through the rooms of the different houses we've lived in.
Oh,
or
wow.
Apartments. Yeah, I mean, they're all there in my brain still. But actually functioning in a new place becomes really our responsibility to bring ourselves, to be willing to bring ourselves to the new space.
And to tell a new story in the new space.
Yes.
The old place was a setting for very many stories. And now you have a new stage upon which to weave new and maybe better stories.
Or different, just that, you know, different. Yes, and I'm very happy that we made a film called Do Dreams Come True? That film was made in my house that we've now left. And actually, that film is getting into many, many film festivals. And the photography of that film is very beautiful. It was done by Rich Hall, who's a wonderful cameraman, and he actually only used a cell phone. You know,
wow.
It really came out nicely, and it has not only many of the rooms, but a little bit of the back porch with some of the flowers blooming, and you know, I have that as a, let's say, a memento and something that is a valuable film about falling in love and some of the ups and downs and how a fairy godmother and a bunch of little girls that came in a dream to dance cheered up this woman. But the theme, I don't know why I said but I don't mean the buts, but anyway, she and her husband, I think because there's a little bit of magic in this particular film. There's a fairy godmother that then shows up when she isn't dreaming. And there's just that hint that life is much more valuable and interesting if we allow in the notion of the mystical, what's not quite explainable, and we don't just, you know, poo-poo that end of life. So
that's
we made that film.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm thinking in this apartment, I'm already thinking about some thoughts about perhaps a short film that might work here, again with a little bit of magic, because the people that owned our house way before us, there were a couple of families in between this family, but this man was very famous for tricks and magic. His name was S.S. Adams, and he actually invented all sorts of things, like, did you ever sit on a poo-poo cushion you didn't know was going to be there that somebody thought was really funny and you sit on it?
Not since
well,
grammar.
Maybe you haven't, but... or you come by some throw-up on the floor that's really plastic. He did... These are all his inventions.
Oh,
and,
really?
Yeah. And if you ever shook hands with someone and felt a buzzer and you go off in your palm of your... Yeah, that was his. So I was thinking that a little film that is a takeoff a little bit on this and this idea of hidden magic and maybe a Ouija board could fit very nicely because this apartment has a very long hall, which could be kind of a little bit scary to set the atmosphere. So, you know, I'm already thinking. I don't know if it'll actually happen, but I'm thinking.
I think it will happen. When you think, things manifest. So if you're thinking about it, it'll be here one day in our world, in our waking world.
Yes, yes. Well, good. You may be. I'll take that as a yes. Okay. So, yeah. And because so many things did manifest in our relationship when we were doing shows together, you know, we
yes.
just anything we needed to talk about just came out with all the right words and thoughts.
I have a couple. Before you read what you have prepared, and your house played a part in my television show and in the movie that I made, because those parts wound up in the television show and the movie. Part of that journey
right.
immortalized there as well.
I forgot all about that, but that's very true. Yeah. It's amazing. Yeah. So maybe someday. I don't know whether... I think you gave me one of the films. At this
yes.
point, if I had to unearth it, I would probably have trouble because I haven't sorted... Go ahead.
We had a flood, and it destroyed all of my TV shows. I drained it all and let it dry and hoped that one day I can salvage it. But I had a huge plastic bin, and the flood water was much higher
mm-hmm.
than the plastic bin, so it filled the whole thing. And I guess the DVD recordings are salvaged, but all the tapes were underwater for more than a day, so
yeah.
I don't know how much
yeah.
of those survived. But I still remember them in memory, and we aired them enough times, so I'm sure they
yes.
exist somewhere.
And that's an important thing, that sometimes we do lose things. We either forget where they are or they're destroyed in one way or another. And thank goodness we can practice our memories of these things.
Yes.
Through just, you know, talking, through writing. And that's the way it is. You know, we have so much more in reality than people did hundreds of years ago.
Mm-hmm.
But still, if you lose something, it's, you know, it's a disappointment, at least for the moment. And right now, there are many things that still have not come to have a home in this apartment yet. I'm sure they will bit by bit. And, I can't find any of my summer hats, and I was always a person that protected my face, and I love to get a hat every summer.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know where they are. You know, like, how can hats just disappear? Well, they can. So let's move on to a couple of stories. I like to honor my mother with a story that she actually wrote, which I think people can relate to, even though whatever your culture. And being Jewish, obviously, that was the culture she was a little girl in. And she wrote a very nice story about going to her grandparents' home on Saturdays, which is the Jewish Sabbath rather than Sunday. And let me just read a little bit of it to you.
Okay.
As we walked the several short blocks to their street, we exchanged greetings with the people we knew. Folks were strolling along Elm Hill Avenue, where the streets were lined with wonderful stately elm trees in full bloom on the spring day. The mingled fragrances of honeysuckles and lilacs perfumed the air. When I took a deep breath, it was like a cool, sweet drink. I felt connected to my neighborhood and enjoyed the comforting sense of belonging. Before we reached our destination, our mother cautioned us, "Be polite and watch your manners. It's gross when your mouth is full of food and you're talking," Arnold, one of her brothers, said. And her other brother said, "You shouldn't stuff your mouth anyway. You could choke." We reached the street and walked up one flight to the spacious 9-room apartment where our grandparents were waiting for us. As the baby of the family, I got extra hugs. I soon detected the mouth-watering aroma of potato kugel, a good welcome. In the living room, we were served fresh kickle bread with chopped chicken livers, well worth their weight in gold and cholesterol. "No one can make kickle and chopped liver like you," my mother told her mother. "It's the absolute best." The chairs in the gracious dining room were upholstered in burgundy and gold damask, which matched the drapes. The sparkling chandelier cast its light on the crystal goblets, gleaming silver candlesticks, and fine china. Grandma had crocheted the champagne lace tablecloth herself. When I saw the dish with jumbo green olives on the table, I said, "Oh, you remember how I love those." Then Grandpa, who was short but handsome in his velvet smoking jacket and yarmulke, made a prayer over the golden brown braided challah, from which we each took a piece before dinner was served. First, we ate fresh fruit cup with sherbet, which was followed by tender lean brisket of beef with candied carrots, stuffed mushrooms, and wonderful kugel. The men talked about prize fighting and the famous champion of the era, Jack Dempsey. The women discussed recipes and the current stage shows in downtown Boston. Encouraged to participate in the conversation, I related the story of my neighbor, Tootsie Friedman, who accidentally put a cherry pit stuck up her nose. The pit moved up and down with her breathing, but wouldn't come out. Her frantic mother, Tootsie, and I drove to the children's hospital where the offending object was removed. What a newsworthy story, I thought. After a foot-high lemon meringue pie and hot tea with little fruit-flavored sugar cubes, our delicious meal was over. Everyone made the usual comments about the fabulous food. Heaven only knows how many pounds we had gained. All the children went to play in Herbie's bedroom, and remind me to tell you about Herbie. Let's see. And his great books, his games, his puzzles were a treat for us. none of us had such a large stock of material at our homes. After we had played for a couple of hours, our parents told us it was time to go home. I didn't want to leave, but I had to. At the front door, my affectionate, generous Grandpa Isaac placed a dollar bill in my hand. "For you, Shana," he said. My brothers received their share also. We were fortunate to have him for one more year. Walking home and well-fed, I sensed our silent consensus that we had spent another Memorial Saturday seated around the bountiful table, breaking bread together. This was one of the times in my life when I could sense my enchanted self emerging. I had such positive feelings when I was surrounded by my loving family. Occasions such as these were unforgettable, and I cherish the memories of when Saturday was really Saturday. And I'm going to stop at this point and
just say
one of the ways to enjoy this type of story is all the sensations that my mother was able to build into it, the smells, the tastes, the feelings of being connected. And if I were giving a workshop, I would ask people, you know, can you go back and find a time? It might be a horseback riding thing you did. It might be fishing, nothing to do with this particular home. But you felt that special connection with other people and a sense of the weather, the atmosphere, the thankfulness that you had these people in your life. And this is good. It's good to remember these things and make them happen again in some way, even if it's a very different way, but it's still, you know, rewarding and feeling good. And I wanted to just mention my great-grandfather and Herbie. You know, it sounds like they were quite rich and had a beautiful life. In reality, their lives were very complex. My great-grandmother lost her favorite. It was my grandmother's favorite sister. She lost one of her daughters in the flu epidemic of 1918. And my grandmother lost her favorite sister, the same woman. And there was a child. And, oh, I forgot to say that her husband died also in the pandemic, okay? So they left a little boy, age 3, and his name was Herbie. And my great-grandparents already had 9 children, plus 2 that had passed, which was common in those days.
Yes, it was.
They had 9 children. They had 9 children, and the Herbie's other grandparents had 10 children, and I think they were not as well as my great-grandparents that I knew. I mean, I didn't really know them, but through my mother. So they adopted Herbie. Herbie became their 10th child. And I don't believe it was ever an official adoption. I don't think those had to happen in those days. But when the kids, all the cousins went to play in Herbie's room, that was Herbie's room because my great-grandparents had not only suffered loss, but had the courage to bring up Herbie, even though they were older. So I wanted to tell you that about Herbie.
Wow.
And my great-grandfather did make a lot of money, but he came here to Boston at 11 or 12, totally alone, took the ride on the ship alone, came to live with some cousins, and I think one of his sisters was already here. But, you know, the trip across Europe and the ocean to get to Boston for an 11 or 12-year-old boy, you can only imagine. And he became an expert in real estate and judging not only buildings to acquire, but he lent money to some of the very wealthy families in Boston. When they would need money, they would go to a money lender, and he was one of them. And, yeah, they were pretty well off, but the complications of life were just as real for them as for anybody else. So that's my main story that I wanted to share. Did you enjoy the story?
Oh, yes, it was a wonderful story, and thank you for your generosity in sharing it.
Yeah, and I bet you have equal stories in your family. Everybody, you
everybody
know.
Does. We have a treasury of those old tales. In fact, I called up a cousin that I hadn't spoken to in a very long time, because I found some tidbits of information about our family history generations ago, and some even thousands of years ago, with new evidence found with DNA testing and everything. And some of the information was information that they'd researched that puzzled them, and I answered questions that they had. And we reminisced about stories that were told and the people who told the stories, and it was wonderful.
It's beautiful. But how do they have information from thousands of years? I'm so eager to know.
With the DNA testing that they do now, like Ancestry.com and things like that, they pick up like piece of information about where genetically, you know, you come from, not so much a nation, geographic area. So in my family, even though we've been Greek for as far back as we can remember, the DNA says, and I haven't taken one yet, but my son took it and other people in my family have taken it. It shows a lot of having lived in Italy, and we don't have any stories of marrying anybody from Italy or coming from Italy. Although we have other stories, but the island that we're from, Lemnos, they found through these tests and through other things like artifacts, the Lemnians and the Trojans of the Trojan War, those Trojans, and also the people in Tuscany, or the Etruscans, they were called in antiquity, now they're called people from Tuscany, are the same people. And there's mythology.
Wow.
But we always, it was always something I just suspected until now. But now with the DNA test, we have the proof that this was indeed so, that a large part of who we are is of the same people that are now in some parts of Italy, who were defeated by the Romans and almost obliterated a long time ago. But that explains the DNA test. And there are stories, too, from long ago that because of this information that's coming up from archaeology, all of a sudden some of these old stories make sense. And I had actually just finished a book some of the obscure tales I heard from my cousin's father when I was a child, that nobody else was aware of these stories. But from that side of the family, we're descended from the Comnenal, which were a Byzantine royalty class. So they would know where treasure hidden and things like that. So these stories survived in the form of nursery rhymes, and archaeology has since borne them out. Before then, they were just colorful stories that existed in our family. But now it seems that these stories had a greater meaning.
That's amazing and very fascinating. I bet it was very heartwarming to find out this stuff.
Yes, it was. And when I shared it with my cousin, because she has lots of people in her side of the family that are compiling the history of our family. And in fact, when I was a child, because I collected these stories, one of my cousins was writing a book, and she interviewed me at great length because I had bothered to ask about all these stories before the older people had died. So I became the repository for all this obscure lore.
Yeah. Yes, it really is amazing and so hard you know, when I think back, like, I'll wonder, what was an ancestor of mine like 300 or 400 years ago? And it's so hard to imagine because there's so few diaries and there's so few information.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, you know, and yet, as somebody pointed out, I forget now exactly when in the last couple of weeks, they said, don't ever tell people that you're weak or you're intimidated or you're fragile or anything like that, because you, in order for us to have been born, we only could exist now because hardy enough people made it through the ages.
Right.
You know, the weaker people were either killed or died, you know, of disease or couldn't bear any children or whatever happened. And we are a product of the strongest people that ever lived.
Yes.
It's interesting. And
yes.
I found that fascinating.
Yes, and even if you look at the sperm that fertilizes the egg in the human reproductive cycle is the champion among sperm, and the egg is the champion among eggs. So it's
That's
a contest
right. That's
to be
right.
alive, and the
yeah.
odds are so great that to have triumphed even in that arena and to come into this world and then to have spent many years in what's essentially a very dangerous place on very many levels. And to make it to pass the latter part of your life and still be around, that's quite an accomplishment. So we're survivors and we're thrivers and we're champions. And that's a healthy way
yes.
of looking at your journey through life and the journey
yes.
of your ancestors through the cosmos.
And it also is should be even more encouragement to take some time, 5 minutes, and list your talents and strengths, and then list your potential, maybe what you have accomplished and what you didn't get to accomplish. Maybe just review it once in a while because there's still time to activate that stuff.
Yes,
and
yes.
You'll feel better. You'll feel better because we feel better when we do sort of what's on our list, and this is like what's on our list for being alive, you know, in this world.
Yes, well,
so it can be very important.
And our family stories help define who we are, too, to a very great extent, because it's not only what happened to us or what happened to our parents,
right.
but what happened to our ancestors, and sometimes holy books, or history books can help us fill in the blanks. And
right.
before you know it, you're part of a great adventure. And that's an awesome thing.
I know. And I know we're almost out of time, but I was listening to a rabbi who's also a mystic. And she was saying that, and I can't prove everything I'm saying, and I didn't get it all quite organized in my brain, but that basically we carry the wounds from past generations of war, of pestilence, of whatever. You know, there's trauma in us that still needs to be purified, and we will not only, you know, we sometimes think it's not necessarily trauma that we have experienced, but we're, like you're saying, this DNA connection. We free sort of a whole group of souls by working, by freeing some of the trauma and replacing it.
Yes.
I'm not, you know, it's sort of like what you were starting to say, and I think there's a whole world there that's yet to be understood.
As I do this work with my past, I'm beginning to believe in genetic memory, which is you know, a
mm-hmm.
controversial topic, or something like the collective unconscious, because I'm finding the weird things I was interested in that never connected to anything. They were just random things that I was very interested in. As I study antiquity, all of a sudden these things are reconfiguring into connections that are thousands of years old. And they were connected at one time, and that somehow a part of my life has been acting on things that are no longer here in this world, or maybe no longer relevant to this world, but some part of me has always been attracted to these things and fascinated by these things and has spent time and energy on these things. It's kind of like you have to ask yourself, as you do with any of such type work, am I living or am I being lived?
Yes. And maybe you're freeing some stuff that helps at some level we don't fully understand by, you know, and you have to be in the past and in the present to some extent at the same time in order to free something.
Right. And unfortunately, we're running out of time. I wish we had a longer show.
Yes. So anyway, I know it was great as usual, and anyone can find me on enchantedself.com. It's my major site, and I'm trying to put a lot of my relevant stuff, stories, articles, films on that site. And you can write to me at barbara.holstein@gmail.com. I do answer letters unless they sound very odd and peculiar. So I'd love to hear from people. And I hope you'll make some sense of what I was saying, make a list of your talents and your still hidden potential, and hope to be back again next month.
You definitely will. And I'm a very big fan of you and your work. And it's contributed very greatly to my own growth and development and unfoldment. So I thank you on behalf of myself and everyone else that you've helped by helping us find our enchanted selves.
Thank you. Good night for now.
Good night for now. And thanks to everybody who tuned in, whether you called in and patiently waited in our queue, whether you clicked on a link and found yourself here, or whether you'll be exploring later on demand. Until next time, this is us wishing you joyous journeys, amazing adventures, and may all of them lead to the discovery of your enchanted self. Good night, everybody, and thanks again, Barbara.
You're welcome. Bye.
Bye.
If you can dream, if you can fly, then your heart can touch the sky. But only if you can dream, if love is true and love is real, pain and sorrow soon will heal, but only if you can dream. Dream till you wake. Dream till you feel. Dream till you know it. Dream till it's real.